Fuck it.
Fuck it.
Fuck it.
Hey, mama. If you are a mom and are tired of the wash, rinse, repeat, burnout cycle of motherhood, this podcast is for you. If you feel lonely and isolated in your motherhood journey, this podcast is for you. If you feel like you have completely lost your identity since your babies were born, this podcast is for you. If you feel like every other mom has it together except for you, this podcast is for you. My name is Amanda, and I'm a life coach dedicated to teaching every mom the tools she needs to liberate herself off the back burner. I am living proof that a woman can be present and loving to her kids while also being a whole ass person outside of being that kid's mom. The secret? Learning when to say fuck it. Hello, my beautiful mamas. Welcome to another episode of Fuck It Mothering, and a special episode. I have a guest for you guys today. I've been doing solo episodes for forever, but I want to bring on more voices to the podcast, more just stories from a different perspective. It's something that's been important to me that I've been wanting to do, and I'm finally doing it. So this week's guest, her name is Natalie Bedard, and she is a fellow life coach, but she is a meditation life coach. So she has a very interesting perspective, and her personal story is just like fucking nuts. She's a single mom to three boys, the younger two are twins. And she went through a medical thing when the twins were four. As a single mom, just incredible person. We had such a great conversation. I'm so excited for you guys to hear it. And just as far as me and my week, I've had a pretty good week. Last week was really crazy. Not the whole week. Monday through Wednesday of last week was crazy because my girls had, it was picture week at the dance studio, and it was just a crazy schedule. I survived. The children survived. We all survived picture week. And the good thing about picture week is that we don't have regular dance classes. So usually my kids have dance classes Monday through Thursday. And so we got Thursday off. And I'm just choosing to look on the bright side there. This week we have a competition, and it is a 4-day competition, you guys. My daughter, Eowyn, has to perform her solo at like 8:30 p.m. Thursday night, and then awards don't start until 11, and then we have to be back Friday evening for round two with her, all of her group dances. Again, awards don't start until 11. I have to be back there Saturday morning at like 8:30 or something. Like, I don't know the exact times. I have to be back Saturday morning for the two littles, and then we're back on Sunday morning for my oldest, Eowyn's duet. I just want to scream. Actually, I did scream. When I first saw the schedule, I like had my panic and freak out. And I was like, this schedule's going to kill me. It's the week after picture week. Like, dance is just going to kill me. This is the week that dance is going to kill me. But I let myself go there. I let myself have my freak out, have my pissy little bitch fit. And now I'm just like, okay, let's do it. I'm done complaining and thinking it's going to kill me, even though it might still kill me. And I also got my desk space like organized and cluttered. I got the clutter off my desk. That's what I'm trying to say. And if you're watching the video, you'll notice that there's some more things for you to look at behind me. I'm getting my wall. Like, I'm getting stuff up on my walls. Like, I have moved so many times since 2019, none of which were like a part of my plan for my life, that I just got to a point where like I stopped fully settling in, because I had a hard time accepting, like, okay, it's safe to settle, you know, so not putting stuff up on the walls, leaving stuff in boxes, and that just does stuff. That just does something to like your mental, your headspace. And although this place that we're in right now is not forever because it's too small and we're renting and it's not in the city that I need to live in. It's still home for right now. And it's definitely home for at least another year. So I'm settling in bit by bit, making it safe to put stuff up on the walls, safe to settle, safe to make it feel like Amanda and the girls, even if it is just for right now. And that can be hard when you're, when you have to move a lot, when you've been forced to move a lot. And so if you're in that space where you've kind of been a vagabond and you didn't intend on that life, I feel you. It's going to be okay. And it's safe to put stuff on the walls. It's good to get yourself, like, my desk feels so much better and I feel more inspired to like actually sit here. I spend so much time in my bedroom because this is my bedroom. Like, this office space is also my bedroom. My bed is right over there. So I spend so much time in this one room. And bit by bit, I've been making it feel like the most comfortable room in the house for me, because that's what it needs to be, because I spend so much time in this fucking room. The weather finally got nice. You guys, it was like 75 degrees, or wait, 74, whatever, basically 75 degrees on Saturday. Holy shit. Holy shit. Amazing. I'm back in a sweatshirt today and I have a blanket on my lap because it's that time of year. It's just going to fluctuate. It's fine. But it's like there's hope on the horizon. It was 74. And we spent the day with some good friends. We were outside all day long. Like, I think we got there at like 2:30 and we didn't leave until like 9. And we were outside the whole time. And my legs got totally eaten up. I wore shorts because I was excited to wear shorts. And then the fucking bugs. I think that nature should give us like a time period in between winter and summer. So sometime in spring, boy, that is the time between winter and summer, where the weather is nice, but there aren't any fucking bugs yet. Okay. It's just like a gold star, you know, like nature, the universe giving us like a gold star for getting through winter. You can have some nice weather without any fucking bugs. You know, like minimum 2 weeks, a month would be great of that. But no, I have like 10 mosquito bites on my legs and they're so itchy and I am a child and I can't stop scratching them because I'm a child. I'm making it so much worse for myself. But even though I got a million bug bites, and they're so itchy and annoying. And then I scratch them and they get red and inflamed. So it looks like I have a disease. It was still worth it. It was still so worth it to be outside all day long with my sunglasses on, just like absorbing all of the vitamin D. I hope you guys got to enjoy good weather too. And if you didn't, I'm so sorry. Hopefully this weekend will be your weekend of nice weather. So I am going to be, like I said, bringing on more guests onto the podcast because that's just something that's important to me. And I know you guys will really benefit from that too. I haven't figured out my guest schedule yet. I'm going to kind of just like throw some episodes out there and see how often I want to have a guest on, you know, like monthly. I don't know. Let me know though, in the review section of Apple Podcasts or the Q&A section on Spotify, how you're liking the new schedule of guests, how often you would like to have a guest and then, you know, versus solo episodes. I'd really love to hear your opinion, because I do this for you guys. So my listeners, please let me know. And if there's a specific type of guest that you would like, me to procure, I don't know why I said procure, have on, let me know, you know, someone who covers a specific topic or just like a specific person. I would love to have all of the feedback because again, I do this for you guys. And when you do that, you help me out too. You help boost the show in the algorithm so that other people can find me and they can become a part of our Fuck It Mothering community. So I enter you into a Starbucks gift card and book raffle every month. Every time you do a review on Apple's podcast on Apple Podcasts. I went to put Spotify and podcast together. That's where that word came from. Every time you do a review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify Q&A, send a screenshot of it to me, DM it to me on Instagram, Facebook, or LinkedIn, or you can email it to me at fuckitmothering@gmail.com, but fuck is without the U. And you'll get entered into my monthly book raffle and Starbucks gift card giveaway as a thank you to you guys. Right. And there's one other thing that I'm super excited to announce to you. I'm going to be rolling out one bonus episode every month called Fuck It Friday. And this is going to be me and two other moms who are also life coaches for moms, but us coming together to be moms first, coaches second. So we're going to say fuck it to the of motherhood. Like for me, I would really love to say fuck it to laundry, just to bring like the realness, the real stories. It's going to be a lot of fun. It's going to be like a mom BFF girlfriend hour. I'm super excited to do that. So we're going to start planning and recording episodes, and I'll let you guys know when the first one of that will be released. I'm super excited for that for you guys. And that's it. Oh, my succulent planters. I did them and they looked super cute. It only ended up saving me $3. Which is so stupid. I just mixed up the two different Amazon listings of succulent, funny succulent planters. So it would have been a two pack for $15. And I bought the Walmart ones for like $6 a piece. Wait, no, something. I don't know. I did the math and I only saved myself $3 by writing the funny sayings on there myself. Whatever. It wasn't like it was a ton of work, and they make me laugh every time I look at my succulents in my kitchen window. I highly recommend get funny planters and get funny bath mats. I have a funny bath mat too. Like get funny anything. Anytime you can decorate your house with something that's funny, it's so worth it because you look around your house and it just makes you laugh. I love you guys. I hope you enjoy my conversation with Natalie, and let me know what you think about it in the review section of Apple Podcasts or the Q&A of Spotify, and I'll see you next week. I forgot to mention, so we started recording, Natalie and I, I thought that we were recording, but we weren't, and then I realized that we weren't recording, and so then we had to like actually start recording. So the beginning of the podcast is like me venting about the recording like not working originally. And I didn't cut it out because it resulted in a beautiful talking point. And there was really no other way for me to edit it other than to just allow you guys to hear the realness of, like sort of the back end of podcasting. So it's a rough transition from right now to like what you're hearing right now to what you're about to hear, but that's what's going on. And I hope that you enjoy the lesson that's in there. Wasn't recording. I'm
now,
so fresh.
I see it now at the top.
Yes. Yes. Now it's okay. I'm glad I caught it at the beginning and we didn't just like go through the whole thing. Embarrassing nonetheless. I apologize.
You don't have to listen. We are in a space to be human. So yes. Let's surrender this apology that technology creates all these things and we need perfection. You caught it.
Yes, I did. Thank you for that.
Let's laugh about it. This is what we're trying to recreate in the world, not this badgering and oh my gosh and getting constricted. It's like, let's laugh about this and continue on. That's the space that I'm creating with people. I'm coming out of this narration of perfection and you wait and all whatever their, indoctrination that we have that, wait, let's laugh about this. And where are the solutions? Where do we continue on?
Yes, exactly. Exactly. And I work with not apologizing with my kids so much because I have four girls and women are socialized to just like apologize all the time. We're just like apologize for fucking existing. And so I work with them so much about like, don't apologize for everything. And so, one of our household rules is whenever we catch each other apologizing for nothing, they get a tit punch. And it just like makes us laugh. So it brings like humor into it because I don't want them to think that I don't want them to apologize for apologizing too, because that also became a thing. Yeah. It's like, no, stop it. Yeah. Tit punch, laugh, just stop doing it.
Yeah. And access the part that, you know, wants to do that because, you know, it's a sense of fear, a sense of that you inconvenienced somebody or there was a mistake. Yeah. You know, once we can pause and be silent and feel that without giving it words or language, that's that work. And it's difficult to engage with the visceral impacts that are in your body, your biology that prompts us just to say these things.
Yes. Yes, it really is. It really is. All right. Introduction all over again. Welcome to the Fuck It Mothering Podcast, Nat Nat. I'm so happy to have you here. Thank you for agreeing to come on as a guest. Natalie is a coach with Lift Oneself. She's an energy healing empowerment coach, and she has an amazing story that I cannot wait for her to share with all of you. So, Natalie, why don't you tell us how you came into coaching?
First of all, I want to say thank you for having me as a guest and sharing this space with yourself in this conversation, and that the audience get to have a sneak peek of what we're going to get into, because I know it's going to be very delicious and very deep.
Yes.
I created Lift Oneself in 2019 because I almost died in 2014. I had lesions in my brainstem and in my cerebellum, which caused me to really have an insight of my own nervous system. I was almost hospitalized for almost 40 days. And the hospital couldn't find out what was causing these lesions. So I went through a battery of painful tests, and they just kept coming back atypical, yet not enough information to find out what is the root cause.
Right. And what were your symptoms that you were experiencing?
I had vertigo. I was bedridden with extreme pain in my brain. I wasn't having a bowel movement. I think it had been 6 weeks. I was throwing up everywhere. I couldn't even keep water down.
Oh my gosh.
My eyes.
And all the tests were coming back like you're normal. Yeah. With all this going on.
Something was wrong, but they couldn't understand why. But I went to the ER 5 times and they kept telling me I just had the flu and go home. I was like,
My God!
Carrying me in here, and actually, the positioning of my eyes, the lesion in my cerebellum was so severe, the lesion that my eyeballs shifted position, and they were cross-eyed.
You just have the flu. Just go home.
Just the flu.
Oh my God!
So even in that, advocating for yourself when you're ill is difficult enough as it is.
I had
one doctor ask me, like, "Are you on street drugs?" I'm like, I haven't even asked you for painkillers.
I'm just
asking for help. And you're asking me, even that doctor. Yeah. So in these experiences, I got to relate to so many people that say things that people like, nah, that doesn't happen. Like I had went for an MRI at one hospital and I went to another, and these two hospitals, their computers didn't communicate. And so when the ER hospital called the other one that I had the MRI, they said I never was there. So, of course, this doctor is going to think I'm just some hypochondriac. My general practitioner had to call the hospital and argue with them to, like, where are her test results. And then when it came back, they were like, oh, it's maybe brain cancer that she has. Come back in 6 months.
In 6 months, maybe it's brain cancer. Come back in 6 months.
Yes. And I have all this stuff documented. So it's like, you know, even my doctor, she's like, if I didn't experience it, I wouldn't believe it. Because it was a lot of stuff that I had to navigate through. And so in the 40 days, I was discharged without a diagnosis and without a plan. So I was in
the wilderness. That was terrifying. You were in the hospital for over a month with all of these crazy symptoms went through, I can't even imagine all of the tests. I've had my fair share of like horrible medical tests. The tests alone are like so traumatizing. It's less like the symptoms. I mean, that's scary in and of itself, but like the tests that they put you through are so traumatizing. You went through all of that and then you still got discharged with no answer.
Yeah.
What did they expect you to do? What did they tell you to do?
Well, they had did biopsies and lumbar punctures, and it was coming back atypical. And then they transferred me to another hospital, and they were going to do a brain biopsy. Yet the head doctor there was like, whoa, wait a minute. All of our tests are coming back atypical, yet not enough information. And if we go take a piece of your brain, we could do some damage. And also come back with no information.
Right.
And so he was like, we're just going to discharge you. They wanted to put me on prednisone, yet prednisone has, 101 symptoms with taking it.
And one of the things,
was psychosis. And I was like, I'm not going on something that could possibly put me into a psychosis.
Yeah.
And then I had, so I was released. They gave me morphine for the pain. And you know, I navigated, like, I was a solo parent and my twin boys were 4 at the time. And my eldest was, I think 17. No, he was 19. He was going to be 20 the next year. Yeah. He was 19 when, navigating through all that. So that, you know, my whole lifestyle had to change. And then I had another relapse where I wasn't able to walk and move. So I went back to the ER and they were like, okay, all we can offer you is prednisone. So I went on the prednisone. And then on top there, it was like more tests. And then, okay, well, we're going to give you some other medication to counteract what the prednisone is doing in your system and yada, yada. And I was like, okay. In 2015, I discovered meditation, which allowed me to go more deeply internally. And it got me to somatically release a lot of the trauma and emotional charges that were in my body that created such a dysregulation, hypervigilance in the nervous system, and a disconnection from self. And so navigating through that, I really became in depth, and I was in a kind of a cocoon. It's like I ate myself as a caterpillar, because, you know, people are always like the caterpillar, the cocoon, and the butterfly. And it's like, do you realize that the caterpillar has to eat itself and turn into goo to be in that cocoon?
Yeah. Then, it's actually like not a pretty process at all.
No. And while you're eating, like, you know, just think the caterpillar's eating itself, turning into goo. What good is going to come from this? Like, nothing good is going to come from this. So that metamorphosis process for myself, I decided to remove alcohol from my diet. I removed sex from my diet. I removed the lifestyle that I had because I went out to parties and took photographs. The engagement that I was the big helper for everybody, we changed that. So I really took away in spending. I took out that too. I engaged with my emotional eating. So I really engaged with facing myself. Was it challenging? Yeah. While being a solo parent to twin boys? Yeah. Yet, because I kind of had death on my door and no diagnosis, that it's like, you don't know whenever this is going to happen again. So your healing has to be internally and really start facing yourself to remove these blockages and remove not being able to feel your emotions, to see yourself, to really experience what it is to be in worth, to be in your love. So when I was going through this process, more and more when I would talk, people would come up to me. Like, I had it before, almost dying in 2014, that people would come and share and talk to me. Yet after this process of me cleaning up my vessel of a body, it was like I was a light and everybody was starting to talk to me and was like, it's like you're in my head. You're making sense for me of being able to be honest and connect to things that I haven't been able to connect with. And so that's when I decided in 2019 to alchemize. take the impurities that I went through and turn it into gold and hold that space for other people to go within themselves. And what I have as a gift is that my nervous system allows other people's nervous system to come into a regulation, that they hook into safety. Because for a nervous system not to be in fight or flight, hypervigilance, it requires safety. And if you want healing, you need radical honesty. And so with the two, I provide a sacred space for people to step into their portal, which is within themselves. A lot of times at the beginning, they think it's me and, you know, I'm like such a guru and oh my gosh, I love you and adoration. Yet I'm always reminding them, I am simply the reflection of where you need to go into. Yes. I'm holding that sacred space for you to come into really what your healing is. And so that when you become honest with yourself, when you really understand what acceptance is, and what you understand what accountability is and what surrender is, then there's that empowerment, that there's an ease with life. Yet it takes a rewiring of your nervous system, a reshaping of your nervous system, creating a new language in how you relate to yourself. And it's not like this miracle where everything is, it's like this is continuous work.
Yet it's the goo. It's the caterpillar goo.
And you understand that this work brings an opening of energy that has no words for it. If you really, you know, when people talk about bliss and euphoria, you really can get into that state by yourself without any drugs, without any sex, without any outside stimulus. Like it's like, oh, I was able to access this on my own. And you're able to really understanding your biology and your chemicals and understanding what stillness is, what that silence is.
Yes. Yes. All right. So I just want to rewind really quick. How long did you have to go before you got a diagnosis? How long did it take them?
I still don't have a diagnosis. I have a diagnosis on paper. It's called neurosarcoidosis because to be able to access disability, because my previous life, I was a security investigator with the government. And so to be able to give verbiage for the medical system insurance, they had to put down neurosarcoidosis. Yet if you look at my files, that was the closest thing that they could work with what this was.
Wow. So how do they treat you then? Like, how are your symptoms like maintained? And
they thought I wasn't going to walk again or drive or be able to be mobile. So when all these things were coming back online, they were like, I don't know how the lesions got there. And I don't know how the lesions are repairing themselves. Like they're scarring from the lesions. Yet what there is for me, you know, a lot of people are like, oh my gosh, you're a miracle and you're healed. And it's like, what the prognosis of what they wanted. Yes. I still live with pain. I still live with, and my pain is in a sense of energy. Cause if I take on too much stress and there's cortisol that's pumped into my system, my body's like shut down mode and I get very fatigued. And everything just feels really slow. So I've had to recreate a lifestyle that doesn't entail a lot of stress.
And how did you do that with twin boys as a solo mom to twin boys?
When I was meditating, at the beginning, you know, they tell you to find a quiet room and meditate. And I get that. I understand that. And I did that for a bit. Yet it came to me, meditate in the living room while they're activating. So what meditation does is it gets you to engage with your nervous system. Your nervous system has one function, don't die. And your nervous system has a negative bias. And so when you're in hypervigilance or high alert or, you know, triggered and activated, your nervous system is finding all the things to make it stop. And it thinks that you have to fix everything on the outside rather than being taught, wait, how do I self-soothe and find out what is agitating me?
What is possibly- Well, and it also thinks that all those things are going to physically kill you.
The twins are fighting. I think I need to come to the rescue. Yes. There's a big noise. I think I need to go find out what it is. I smell something. Oh my gosh, it's high alert. Where the meditation allowed me to be, no, just give it some space. If there's a real response that's needed, then it will come again. Yet give it some space. Don't be impulsive with reacting right away.
And right. So
meditating in the living room with the twins allowed me to interact with their noise in a different way, to see that they're little human beings navigating through the world, trying to discover it, trying to discover what it is to be myself. And then I have this other individual that's taking all this attention and time from the one parent that I want, or I have to share things, or, you know, collaboration. So it really, you know, was the boot camp. And what I've really understood was meditation isn't just to be a sitting practice. It's to bring it in the everyday life. And that's what I
elaborate on that.
Actually, would you be willing to come into a meditation with me right now?
Absolutely.
Okay. For the audience, I know a lot of them are listening to this and driving or doing some physical activity. I'm going to have Amanda and myself close our eyes. I'm going to ask you not to do that because I want you to be safe and everybody else to be safe. yet the other prompts, you're able to engage with whatever activity that you're doing. So, Amanda, I'm going to ask you to close your eyes and get comfortable in your seating. And you're going to begin breathing in and out through your nose. And you're going to bring your awareness to watching your breath go in and out through your nose. You're not going to try and control your breath. You're going to be aware of its rhythm. Yet you're going to keep your focus on watching your breath go in and out. There may be some sensations or feelings that are coming up in the body. You're safe to feel. You're safe to let go. There's nothing you have to push away. Just stay with your breath and allow your body to release. Surrender the need to control. Release the need to resist. And just be. Be with your breath. Drop into your body. Just keep your awareness on your breath. By now, your other senses may be listening, smelling, feeling. You're not going to try and control anything, and you're not going to allow yourself to analyze it. You're just going to invite everything in and let it pass through while still staying with your breath. Just keep your awareness on your breath and going deeper into your body. Now, while still staying with your breath, at your own time and at your own pace, you're going to gently open your eyes while staying with your breath.
You have such a relaxing voice.
That's what I mean about my nervous system sends out a frequency for others to feel that relaxation and that safety.
Yeah. Yeah. I felt it.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
And it took a while for me to accept that because it's like, well, everybody has this. And people are like, no, they don't, Nat. Like they, they don't. And even, you know, with talking with people and they've gone through therapy and therapy has its point, yet it only gets to a certain place.
Yes.
And I bring people vertically down into their nervous system where it makes more sense and they can hear the messages and they can feel the sensations and not shut them off.
Right.
And so, you know, when people work with me and they're like, I did 2 years with my therapy and like in 2-3 sessions with you, it's made more sense than the 2 years that I spent with, you know, talk therapy or behavioral therapy. And they're all different modalities that help you better understand yourself. Mm-hmm. Where I'm bringing you is to facing yourself.
Yeah.
And to loving yourself with everything. Yeah. Not the, you know, we fragment out the self and it's to bring ourselves back into a whole, a W. And the things that are in the shadow, it's to bring it into the light and have acceptance. You're irritated. Yes. You're angry. You're frustrated. You're envious. You're jealous. All these different things that we're told shouldn't be mm-hmm. are actually causing a splinter from you accepting the whole of you and navigating in that human experience.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And that's so hard for women to accept because we're socialized to people please. We're socialized to like worry about everyone else's emotions and create emotional safety for everybody else. But yet we're not able to have acceptance for the full range of our emotions, our own emotions. We're always told like we're too emotional. We're making a scene. You know, it's not cute for you to be angry. Like all of these things. And so it's especially hard for women, I feel, to accept those more masculine emotions, like, well, anger, really. Yeah. It's just not okay for us to be angry.
And with my clients and anybody that will listen, I'm like, you need to have a healthy relationship with anger.
Yeah.
And people are like, anger healthy? I've never heard of that. I'm like, yeah, you need to befriend anger. There's messages in the anger and underneath the anger is deep sadness and fear. Yet you're not able to articulate the fear. So the anger has to come out to protect you.
Yes. Yes. I'm always talking to my kids about that too, because I'm trying to like start these conversations young. And, you know, whenever they're like exploding, usually at each other, it's like, okay, but anger is the easy grab. Anger is the thing that you grab when you're feeling something that you don't want anyone else to see you feeling. Usually you're feeling pretty vulnerable. You know, you're feeling like you were saying, you're sad or you're scared, but you don't want anyone else to see you sad or scared. And so you grab anger because it's a real easy, quick cover.
Yeah. And sometimes what we're feeling, we're not even able to articulate and put it into a verbiage, into words.
Right.
So anger just is
so used to not paying attention to it at all and pushing it as far away from us as possible.
Yeah. So yeah. When you allow the anger to come up and then take those breaths of what are you feeling? What is it that you want to communicate? What is it that you may not have words, but it's just this sensation I'm overwhelmed in. Okay, let's breathe until the information can come up. And it's a process. Like that's why, you know, parenting is very messy.
Oh my God, it's so messy.
Very messy. And then we get criticized that we're not good enough and we're doing all kinds of damage to our children.
Constantly, no matter what we're doing, like literally no matter how we're going at it or like what strategies we're using this month, someone always has an opinion about how that's wrong and how you're going to fuck up your kid permanently.
All the time. And then if you've experienced trauma, you don't want to redo that to your child.
Right.
But spoiler alert. Okay. Trauma is very insidious. And unless you face the trauma and really feel it, we're humans do patterns, but our patterns get disguised. So it may not look exactly how it felt in your trauma, yet it's re-happening again in the parenting. That's why it's warrior work to face yourself in your parenting to see what is it that I'm redistributing because I haven't been able to integrate and really feel the fullness of that experience.
Yes.
And another spoiler alert, you are going to cause trauma and harm to your child. There's no escaping pain in being human.
Right.
There's degrees of that. And I'm not talking about like, oh, you're really, you know, psychologically and emotionally and physically harming your child. It can be as simple, you are being passive aggressive and don't know how to articulate your anger or frustration with your child, but they're feeling it energetically and they feel a closing And then they mm-hmm. want to be your emotional regulation, and they don't know how to fix you or make you in a better state. That is a type of harm and trauma.
Right.
Yet it's being able to not look at where are we disconnecting? Where are the repairs?
Mm-hmm.
Repair it. We're going to make mistakes. We're going to be messy.
Yeah, because we're all human. The goal is not to be perfect. And the goal is not like eternal happiness, never feeling sad, never feeling disappointed, never feeling frustrated or angry. Like, it's always going to be 50-50. It's always going to be 50% positive emotions and 50% negative emotions. It's about teaching your kids how to walk through that human experience, like how to be okay with their own humanness. And we can't do that unless we become okay with our humanness.
Yet it's not even, it's always 50-50, because whatever you feel is on the other side.
What do you mean?
Well, you feel happiness. Underneath mm-hmm. it will be some sadness. You had to experience the sadness to really appreciate what you really like. You had to appreciate the loss to really understand what you have.
Yes. And you have to go through a rainy spell before you can appreciate sunshine. You have to go through winter before you can appreciate the warmth of summer.
It's recognizing to come out of the black and white of thinking it's just happiness. It's just anger. It's just this. It's all one spectrum. But we've been doing a la carte. You can only feel these emotions around me. Every other emotion, go to your room and do it by yourself. Where it's like, and we are multidimensional beings. I know some people will be like, you're talking alien. Let me say it this way. We multitasking that we so, we think we can do so perfectly. We cannot.
No.
Yet you can speak and cook at the same time while like listening out for your child. That is a type of multitasking. We can do. Well, our emotions are the same way. You think it's just happiness that's happening, yet there's other things that are going on in the background to support that. You think it's just anger, like I said.
You know, 500 different things all at once.
So we're multidimensional, and it's to come out of this black and white thinking that it's only one thing that's happening at one point. It's a multitude. It's allowing ourselves to enter into context.
Yeah.
Where a lot of times we don't have time for context. We don't have time to really sit for a moment to see, well, what was this behavior about? We just want to.
Well, that is not the American way. I know you're in Canada, but that's definitely not the American way to like sit and like think. No, we don't have time for that.
No, that doesn't happen in the industrial complex.
Right.
Emotions aren't allowed because that's going to.
That doesn't make for a good employee.
No.
Right.
And so having these discussions allows us to be, we have to be the change. We want the world to change. We want the school system to change. We want all these things to change. It's the change only happens within us. So if each individual starts to do the change and shift things, then that's where the change becomes.
Yeah, because then we'll collectively shift.
We're grasping on the outside again.
Yep. And it's really empowering to accept radical responsibility for your own like emotions and your own okayness, instead of constantly trying to make everything else outside of you change in order for you to feel okay.
That's what I call processing your shit.
Yeah.
There is some stuff that you have to process that feel like manure, yet you wouldn't have a vibrant garden without manure.
Right.
And you're going to constantly have to process shit. Life is impermanent. Life is always changing.
Yep.
And another thing that needs to come to the forefront of conversation is grief. People don't even realize they go through grief at least once a year.
I know. And they don't realize, like, they don't even know how to feel it. And then when it keeps coming up, you think that like you're doing it wrong or you're behind or you're not actually like processing it. It's not linear at all. Nothing in life is linear. Grief is definitely another thing that we don't talk enough about and we just don't make space for.
Because it's a very heavy, dense emotion, a very dense energy. And we've created some definitions around grief that are very damaging. We've created a wrong definition with death. We don't even know how to interact with it, to really embrace it, to allow it to fuel us, to pivot, to really be alive. You know, a lot of us forget that time is a tool. It's not a toy.
Yeah.
And therefore, like grief too, we have a narrative. It's only if somebody dies, like if the physical body of somebody has perished, well, then that's allowed to be grief. Losing a job, damaging your car, your child not being able to win a baseball game, your partner splits up, adultery, all these different things, you're going to have to grieve a part of you that was there to come into this new part. And if you don't, there's a real dense energy of depression and anger. And we use all these substances to help our energy, you know, walk along, where it's like, you're not facing the pain.
Mm-hmm. You're not grieving the life that you thought you were going to have. So then you can't make space for the life that you are having right now. I have to ask about like your time when you were coming into meditation and you were learning how to do it in the chaos of being a single mom with twin boys and what that looked like for you, because it's easy to look at the you that is now, right? The like meditation master. And if someone is like first coming into meditation and they try it out and it's a fucking shit show, they're going to be like, I'm just not that type of person. You know, they might just use that as an excuse. Just like, well, that's just not me.
Yeah.
So what did that look like for you? Like, what was the messy, like just trudge of learning this new skill of meditation?
So my entry into meditation was through TM, Transcendental Meditation. So you're given a mantra to use to distract your mind. So it's really distracting your nervous system, because your nervous system is like this force field. And once you can go through the force field, that's where you're accessing the stillness and the depths. At the beginning, I was going very profoundly, but I was feeling a lot of stuff come out of my system. Mm-hmm. And I told my teacher, because she had said, you know, a lot of people start meditation and then they get to a certain point and then they stop. And then they come back a year later and they're like, oh, let me try again. And I was like, I totally understand why people quit. This shit is not for the weak. The stuff that you have to engage with in your body. What the fuck? What the shit is this? Yeah, no, it's not like, and that's where I say, like, I engage with removing alcohol, removing sex, removing all these things that would help you to soothe and navigate.
To cope, yeah.
I was like facing myself and it was messy. I fell a lot. Yet I had death on my head. I have this physical body that is depleting and low energy. And I don't know, like, is what is really causing this.
And the medical system is totally failing you.
They don't understand. So it's like, okay. Like, even when I talked to the doctors and I was saying what was going on internally, when I was like able to walk back and my eyes readjusted and stuff, they're like, well, it's sounding like some mindfulness, but whatever you're doing, just continue on because it's working for you. And I'm thinking, wouldn't you want to know more about me so you can help other people to, you know, go in? Yeah, that's for another discussion.
So I'm wondering if you have a story, like a specific story of like chaos ensuing and you battling like your own inner critic while still trying to desperately just hold on to this thing that you decided to do for yourself.
That story of putting myself in the living room, meditating while the twins were playing and watching TV and fighting, and me hearing my system, turn the music down. This guy, shut up. Stop fighting. What are you watching? This isn't good. Oh my gosh. Come back to the breath. This is what, but they need to come back to the breath. But something just banged outside. Come back to the breath. What is, come back to the breath. Come back to the breath. Come back to the breath. And then learning, I don't need to listen to that voice. It's trying to protect me.
Right.
Because the nervous system is analyzing everything all the time. Don't die. Everything's a threat. Let's try and organize it. Mm-hmm. Yet really creating a space of not being identified with the voice.
So being good.
In the trenches,
yes,
allowed me to create that separation of I'm not my nervous system.
Yes.
No, people say I'm not my body. What they're really saying is I'm not my nervous system.
Yeah.
And you have to be in your body to be able to understand the spirituality. Mm-hmm. Your body is the radio, the transmitter to get the messages and the information. But if you're always just in your head, you're just recycling all the indoctrination, all the things that have been told to you.
Yeah.
When you can go into your body and go past your nervous system into the depths of stillness, that's where all that creativity and information and wisdom lies.
Yes.
That space of nothing and everything.
Yes.
And so it takes time to keep cultivating that. And, you know, sometimes people will be like, oh, I had a perfect meditation. And then today it was a shit show. And it's like, well, that was a perfect meditation too.
Right. And because they probably think that like they took a step backwards. Like, oh man, I thought I was understanding it. And now I'm like three steps behind again. It's like, no, because it's not linear.
You're understanding, you're expanding your self-awareness.
Yeah.
You're expanding your self-awareness.
Yep.
And you're going to continuously expand your self-awareness because guess what? The more you do healing, the more you change, the more new things come up. And the more you deal with life, life is changing, things are impermanent. So you're going to continuously have some meditations that are deep profoundly and other times where it's like, oh, I'm learning about myself. Oh, this thing is now triggering me and that thing is starting to trigger me. Because let me give you another spoiler alert. There is no arrival. There are things that you think you healed. There is no healed. It is a continuous action. So say all of a sudden you had a really difficult time with your parent. Mm-hmm. And it brought up a lot of anger and just frustration and no patience. And then all of a sudden, you know, you went through the healing and you could hold conversations and you're not triggered.
Yeah.
And everything's going great and oh, harmonious and woo, zen and kumbaya. And then a year later, all of a sudden, it came back where I'm getting irritated by them. Well, we get visitors that come back and say, hello, are you going to invite me in? And what have you learned?
Yeah.
Are you going to be able to apply your tools?
Yeah. And keep applying them. Like we think that, you know, like you said, like we've just arrived. Like, so we learned a tool and we've implemented it successfully a few times. And so we think like, oh, I don't have to work at this anymore. It's like, no, you still have to pick the tool up and choose to use it every time.
Yes, exactly. And so a lot of times people are like, well, I thought it was over this. There is no over.
Right.
There's no overcoming.
Right. Yeah. It's a hard pill to swallow, though, because like it's kind of the thing that helps to motivate us to start is this idea that there will be an arrival. There will be a time when it's not so hard, when You know, like you were saying, you're healed. So it's over. And I'm not sure if anybody would really begin if they believed in the beginning that there's not an end. Because that pessimistic like version of ourselves would be like, well, what the fuck the point is this then?
Yeah. And that's why I've changed the narration with my work.
Yeah.
It's like, you're going to understand your nervous system.
Yeah.
So instead of being dragged by the stallion, you're going to learn how to ride it.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
And, you're instead of being autopilot in a car, you're going to drive it manually.
Yes.
So when I'm saying nervous system and people are like, that's too big. Like people aren't going to understand. I'm like, they're driving in this car already. Mm-hmm. Why would we not educate people about a car that they're already driving in that's autopilot?
Right.
Let's start being manual with this. And instead of always having to be on the freeway, take the side roads, take the country road, take a slow road so that you can slow it down and enjoy the view, not just vroom, 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 vroom all the time.
Yes.
Take charge of what your life is to look like. Work with your biology.
Yeah.
Not what the indoctrination of the world has told you you have to be able to belong.
Yes. Yes. Yes.
So the meditation at the beginning was you really have to be disciplined to meditate every day. no, like your mind's going to tell you, no, not right now. No, I don't have time. I don't want to do this. I don't. It's just like the gym. I don't want to do this. I don't want to. And it's at least show up. If you're not able to meditate, like in your process, at least show up. So you are wiring your body that this is what is needed.
Because so when you say show up, are you saying like you scheduled the time to do it, you know, at this time every day? And so you're going to not do anything else during that set time.
Correct.
Okay.
And so, you know, and that's why a lot of people hire me, because in our sessions, we're meditating. Like we just
did. It forces them to show. It's just why people hire a personal trainer at the gym. It's just like, it's one thing to have a gym membership, and it's another thing when you have a person who's standing there waiting for you to show up for your session, and you pay extra for these sessions. Like, yes, that's the main reason why coaching works, is just having someone holding you accountable to your goals.
And as you saw, my frequency allows this deep relaxation. Mm-hmm. Like your body felt different. So then we're able to get into a space of, because I really understand the nervous system and I understand the blockages because of what I've put myself through. So mm-hmm. I have a language of accessing people for them to understand what they are needing. And so, you know, what we did for a minute and a half may have felt like torture for some of the listeners if they've never meditated before. And where the meditation I'm bringing you in is facing yourself. Like mantras yes. help distracting. I'm doing warrior work with you. Yet I know you have the capacity because you're hooked into me. And I know different techniques also, so that these emotions that are finally feeling safe to come up, that you're able to let them come up and not push them back down. You were going to say something.
I was just going to agree. Yeah. Meditation feels like ass when you're first starting it. It's because we don't allow ourselves to have time to actually hear ourselves think. We like the Western civilization, like industrial revolution, like version of human beings has us going from sun up to sundown, especially moms, because we are told that if we're not going to do the traditional thing and stay at home, we have to be superwomen. So like we don't give ourselves any white space at all. We don't actually know what it's like to just be still and not do anything. And it drives you crazy because you feel like you should be doing something. And then your brain is just like, well, we should be doing something. So let's like talk about the grocery list. Let's talk about like the schedule after work here, because we still haven't figured out the logistics of how we're getting kid A to dance and kid B at karate at the same time, you know? And so it just feels horrible when you first start meditating, because it's just it's so foreign from what we've been taught to do.
Because the majority of people are in their head and not in their body.
Yeah. Yeah. And it feels awful to be in your body when you actually like you're in your body. It's just like, oh, I want to get out.
Yes.
Yes.
And to come back into your body, understanding that there's going to be these foreign sensations that are coming up. They're like foreign visitors. So you're like, I don't even know how to feel that. Well, of course you don't, because you've never felt it before.
Right.
And you've been pushing it down since a child, probably. So it's decades and decades of buildup. Mm-hmm. So it's going to take some time to allow a cleaning of this.
Well, yeah, people don't know how to feel an emotion. They just know what it feels like to resist an emotion. Like I work with my clients too about like just feeling, just letting your feelings be there. Just like letting them exist in your physical body. And they always think I'm telling them to feel awful, because like all they equate like this negative emotion with feeling absolutely horrible for like days. And I'm like, no, that's what resisting an emotion feels like. You actually have no idea what it feels like to allow it in your body. When you allow it, you pass it so much faster. Like physiologically speaking, it takes 90 seconds for your body to process of an emotion. What keeps it coming back is we keep thinking the thoughts that are making us feel that feeling and then resisting it. And you combine the two and you are just in a shitty mood over one thing that happened for like a week.
And those are called habits.
Yes.
And a lot of people are not recognizing the habits that they've created for themselves. And when you have people face that, wait a minute, I've been doing this to myself, it takes a bit of time to, some people will act like take accountability. Other people are like resistant. I don't want to hear that, that it's everybody else. It's everybody else on the outside.
Yes.
Yet if you really listen to the logic, if it's somebody else, you don't have any control over that.
Yeah. How horrible is that?
So it's like, okay, what is it about you that you're doing so that you can change it? Mm-hmm. But we all know how difficult it is to change ourselves.
Yeah.
So this is what meditation allows, to be more engaged of seeing yourself, more engaged of understanding your biology and the things that it has created as a defense mechanism that helped protect you when you were younger, yet doesn't serve you as an adult anymore.
Yeah.
Like some of our emotions that we felt, it wasn't safe to feel them.
Right.
Because the adults or the caretakers were not accepting of that. And there could have been like serious harm psychologically, emotionally, even physically.
Yeah.
So, you know, holding space for that, because that's a part of grieving too, that you see that, oh, I abandoned myself.
Yes.
Not that it was intentional. It was in a way of protection. Like everything is in a way of protection. And so meditation allows this change within yourself to access your nervous system, mm-hmm. access your biology, better understand yourself, and better understand, especially the listeners that are parents, what you're projecting and continuing on with your children.
Yeah.
That you finally say, you know what, I'm going to take responsibility and I'm going to feel all this stuff.
Yeah.
And not project it and do hot potato and pass it on.
Right. Right.
Which isn't, you know, you're not seeing it intentionally. Some of us do. We're like, I don't want to deal with this. Let's just continue.
I believe the majority of humans do not do this consciously.
No.
I believe in like most humans are good. Like we're all born.
They're all good. We're all good. It's if we're willing to face ourselves.
Yes.
If we're willing to face our nervous system and what has been created as a programming and what the defense mechanisms are doing. Mm-hmm. And so really understanding that, you know, the love, like really the depths of what love is and really the depths of what accountability is. Accountability isn't about punishment and berating yourself.
No.
It's coming back of where's the grace and compassion? Mm-hmm. Like you may have harmed someone and that's not something that you wanted to do. However, allow yourself to have the compassion of hugging yourself and feeling that deep sadness.
And knowing that because you hurt someone doesn't mean that you're a bad person. Like it just means that we're humans and we make mistakes.
Yeah.
And whenever we catch ourselves, you know, doing something that isn't in alignment with the person that we want to be, that's just good information, because then we can make an adjustment and realign ourselves.
Exactly. And, you know, that's why I created the Lift Oneself, because I saw that there were so many people suffering in silence and trying to get resources, but just not getting to the fullness of it, mm-hmm. and really seeing that there's still something lacking. And so that's why, you know, I said, okay, well, let me bring what I have. I have a language that's very simple. I have a nervous system that provides a safety space and that people can really get to understand the depth of spirituality, healing of, oh, I have to face the pain and face myself.
Yeah.
And really change the narrative of understanding life is impermanent. Mm-hmm. Have a different relationship with death. Because if you think, you know, something's going to be lost, you're going to grasp and you're going to defend and you're going to react, mm-hmm. rather than be having a space of, wait, let me process and let me respond with this. Mm-hmm. However, and take responsibility of what's going on in me, not putting out all the fires outside that's ringing my alarm off.
Right.
And so I just wanted to empower people to have their own language and, you know, find what works for them. There's 101 different ways to be mindful.
Yes.
And I'll give pointers for my clients. Yet when they come back and they say, well, I did it this way, I'm like, great. You're understanding what the empowerment is. It's not following what I'm giving you as a prescription. It's creating your own recipe.
Yeah.
You may have taken some ingredients of mine, yet you're creating your own recipe, because I don't know what your biology fully needs.
Right. Right.
You're living your experience. You're living your environment.
Yes. Yeah. That's very similar to the concept that I teach my mamas is like, there's a million ways to be a great mom. There's like one way to do it wrong. And that's if you're like physically, emotionally, like deeply abusive to your child, then you fucked up. But all the other shit that we worry about, like how much screen time, if I'm a free range mom or if I am, you know, a planner mom, like all these different things that we worry about, it's just like none of that shit matters. Just do what feels good to you because you are the one who knows your kid. I don't know your kid. Stop outsourcing your authority to all the parenting experts. You just need to learn how to tap into your own authority and trust yourself because you know your kid best.
Exactly. And even to that parent that may have fucked up emotionally or physically for their child, if you start the journey of repairing yourself, that sends a signal into their nervous system. And if you can hold the space of forgiveness, of taking responsibility of your actions and what happened in their childhood, that in itself is a healing balm for that child to recognize, wait, some of this shit isn't mine. Yeah. I did see it in the right way. And you know, you're going to go through some rocky roads with that. However, that space of taking responsibility for your actions and seeing that I didn't see it right and sorry for the harm, that is a deep repair.
Yes.
That I think it's lacking in where people will be like, oh, I fucked up and there's nothing I can do. No, you can take responsibility by acknowledging your part.
Yes.
And giving the space for your child. But a lot of times that can be difficult because the parenting role has a good seducing Kool-Aid that I got to have it all right. Because if not, then I'm being berated by this role that I'm not good enough.
Yeah.
That if I acknowledge this, that it's going to diminish who I am because this parenting role has to know it all and has to have it all figured out. Yet when you can enter that space, that's even more of a deep healing in the collective.
Yes. Yes. That's so beautiful. I love that. Another question that I had that I wrote down from earlier when you were telling me about your whole journey of your medical experience. How did you navigate through mom guilt? Because I'm just going to go ahead and assume that you had mom guilt being a single mom and being in the fucking hospital for over a month because you're human and everybody would have mom guilt. Like, how did you navigate that?
It wasn't as prevalent in the hospital because there was a surrender to death. Mm. Like I really thought I was going to die.
Oh.
Like I was in the ethers of that. Like my body.
You were more preparing yourself for leaving.
Yeah. And there was an opening. Like I was happy. Like it was like, it's okay. I don't have to hold and clench on and cave in. Yet there was, it was there. Like I'm seeing my son because I had to do my will on my hospital bed because I had in my head, if I did a will, that death was going to come. So having to put my son through that, you know, that was very painful to see, like, you didn't do the responsibilities of yourself. Mm. And then the twins coming to visit me in you know, the hospital room. And
how old were they at that time?
Four.
Four. Okay.
Very loud. And then it was like, okay, be quiet. Cause there's other patients and you know, they need rest. And, it's like I still got mom guilt. Like what? I'm like, get over. I'm like, mom guilt still comes up in me. Like I still berate myself and people are like, I don't see the totality of myself. Like when I'm telling you all this stuff that I went through, like sometimes I don't feel the depths of it. Like people are like, you did all this meditation and inner work while like you're medically depleted and a solo mom.
Yeah.
I'm like a single person doing this and I can barely survive. Like, what are you? And I'm like, yeah, like you're not seeing the warrior. Like you keep saying this is warrior work, yet, you know, it's acknowledging it. It's seeing like, okay, yeah, it can be difficult to see the actions that you've done. It can be difficult to see the lack that's there. Yet let's sit down and let's talk about it so that we can find a way to come out of it. No longer berate it and push it away. You're coming to tell me something. The mom guilt is coming to tell you something.
Yeah.
And it's befriending that mom guilt and not, oh, it's just going to go away and not bother me. It's like, okay, well, what are the remnants that are still coming up that's still my work?
Right.
Like, just because you understand your nervous system and biology, it doesn't mean that these narrations, like I said, the knock on the door isn't going to come and say, hey, are you alive? Because again, the mom guilt, if you don't feel it, you're splintering yourself again. Mm-hmm. You're creating holes with an H where it's like, okay, you're coming up. What are you trying to say to me? And if it's just garbage, it's like, okay, I understand. Why am I afraid? What is it that's in the unknown uncertainty that I'm afraid of that I'm not able to articulate?
Yeah.
Because that's mostly what comes up in mom guilt.
Right.
We're afraid of our children's future.
Yeah. And we think that their future is our business and it's in our control.
And that we fucked it all up.
Yeah. And it was on our plate to begin with. It's like, that's not on your plate. You can only do so much to shape your children. Eventually they become adults and they get to make their own choices. I mean, they're making their own choices right now. Like, they're autonomous little humans. It's terrifying. Accept it. It just is going to be terrifying. And you have to accept that.
It is. And so to say, like, you know, when I was navigating through there, there was a total different surrender. Like, I missed that space. It was very blissful. And like my nervous system just, it was a different state. And now I look at it and I'm like, oh, you've activated some defense mechanisms. And now that the twins are teens and relating, it's like a different, we go through different stages. Yet that mom guilt, it's just facing it. Mm-hmm. Okay, you came to visit. What are you trying to tell me? If there's some information, good. If there's not, okay, I'm in fear. What am I in fear of?
Yeah.
It's really acknowledging, what emotion am I feeling?
Yeah.
If the mom guilt is coming up, your biology is trying to activate something. Mm-hmm. It's trying to tell you something.
Right.
And again, it's, what are you feeling? Mm-hmm. And I don't know how to feel this. I don't know how to feel the uncertainty and the unknown.
Right.
And that's what meditation helps you with. Because you come to discover with meditation, you have no control.
Yeah.
You really have no control. You don't know when you're going to die.
And it's okay that you don't have control.
Yeah. So it's a very debilitating awareness to have at the beginning, yet there's significant freedom. So that's where, you know, your faith comes in and your trust. Mm-hmm. That's what's meant for me is for me. And I still have to show up in the ways that whatever's guiding me. However, what I thought I had to do, it's like, let me get myself out of my own way and flow in this energy of life.
Yeah.
Like, I still have breath. And what is the breath trying to tell me? Where is it trying to guide me? This life wasn't to be unjoyful. Like, where's the joy? And it doesn't mean that when you have joy, you don't have responsibilities and it's not mundane. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And there's going to be shit shows and there's going to be fucking, I don't want to do this. And this is fucking disgusting. And these kids are whatever and blah, 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 blah. And allowing yourself to have those expressions in those moments.
Yeah. Yes.
Because it's heavy psychologically.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, to be clear, when we're saying to like find the, like, life is supposed to be joyful and to find those moments of joy and stuff, we're not talking about toxic positivity. Like, it's not about forcing yourself to think, you know, everything is great and I have to love every little bit of my life. It's just, it's grounding yourself. So like, the thing that comes up for me is mornings are chaotic. I'm also a single mom. I have four girls and mornings suck. And just accepting that mornings suck. But also when I would go outside to put the lunch boxes in the car in the morning and I'm shutting the door as they're screaming at each other because somebody took someone else's makeup or someone's in someone's way or like whatever's happening. And I shut the door and all that screaming and chaos that I just let out into my neighborhood. And I take a moment to breathe and appreciate the sunrise because it's winter. And yes, it's freezing outside, but the sunrise is so beautiful. And I don't miss it because it doesn't happen until 7 a.m. You know, it's just like I'm accepting the chaos and also finding a moment of joy.
Exactly. Coming out of that black and white thinking. And yes, this toxic positivity does a lot more damage to people.
Oh my God, so much damage. It's not helpful at all.
That's why, you know, when you said, well, would people start this journey if they didn't think there was an arrival? And that's where I'm squashing that. Because that's part of that toxic positivity.
Yeah.
Let's just have gratitude away it. Let's just think it away. Let's just pivot our mind. That's why I said, okay, joyful. But, you know, you can enjoy the anger. You can enjoy the messiness of your life.
Yeah.
Of, oh, I'm accepting myself. I'm not putting on this performance or this mask of who I should be attaining to. I'm actually feeling my way through the growth.
Yeah.
The process.
Yeah. And just appreciating like how very alive you are in every moment.
And take your moments.
Yeah.
Like I just showed you the meditation technique, and it's like, you know, when you're on the toilet, just breathe. When you're washing the dishes, kids are fucking screaming in the car and you're trying to get them to some activity. Anchor your breath.
I do a lot of breathing in the car.
Oh, yeah, me too. And you know what's funny? As much as I do it all the time, then the twins or my oldest like, what's wrong, Mom? I'm like, I'm
breathing away your stress, child. Be quiet.
Breathing. I'm modeling what is needed so I don't project.
Yeah.
Oh. What do you do? I'm breathing.
Have you been able to teach your boys meditation, or are they like not into it yet?
They were a bit when they were younger.
Yeah, it's easy to get little ones to sign up for anything.
Now it's like, no. I got my oldest to, he paid for the TM because you have to pay for transcendental meditation. And that was the thing too. Like I had to go on a disability. I was on EI, not getting my paycheck.
Yeah.
But I found money to make this work. And so I'm like, if you really want it, it will come. Like you will find the resources to make it happen. And
if you really want to do something, you'll find a way. If you don't want to, you'll find an excuse.
Exactly. So when I speak, it's like I've walked the walk.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, a lot of times you'll hear in your head, oh, that's easy for you to say because you didn't. And I'm like, I went through a shit show.
Yeah.
Like I have walked through the trenches.
Yeah.
Where people are like, how the heck can you be so positive or have affirmation, or how can you be so like calm? And like when I'm posting my stuff, how can you be so calm? I'm like, because I've done the work, like,
yeah,
I've gone through the trenches.
Yeah.
But the toxic positivity, recognize you are, there's hills and valleys to life.
Mm-hmm.
There's hills and valleys to life. Yet the valley does not have to be in the shadow of darkness. It can be a valley that has flowers and a creek and a river and have sunshine.
Yes.
Like it just can.
Yes. Because to think that it doesn't is just black and white thinking. And life isn't black and white.
No. So it's, again, the power of choice.
Mm-hmm.
And yet it's power of choice of also not denying your emotions.
Right.
Because that's, again, another way to resist your emotions.
Yes.
That's what that toxic positivity does. And that only works for so long. Then all of a sudden, when you are in your 60s and 70s and there's an array of things that have to come, it's like, why isn't it working anymore? And it's like, you were supposed to do your work.
Yeah.
So, and, you know, we're all processing. There is no trying. You are doing it.
Mm-hmm. Yes. You're doing it right now. In this moment, no matter how messy it is, no matter how many times you failed, and also failure isn't a problem. It's a part of the process. It's necessary. Otherwise, you aren't going to learn anything.
It's learning.
Yes. Yes.
Learning isn't A plus and having 100% on 100%.
I know.
Learning is making mistakes.
Yeah. And I was teaching my 7-year-old this again. We hard boiled an egg, and then she wanted to try to get the shell off and crack it. And she accidentally like smushed the egg when she was rolling it, and she was beating herself up. And I'm like, it's okay. It is the first time that you've tried to do this. You have to fail. You have to get it wrong a bunch of times before you figure out how to do it the right way.
Yeah.
It's okay.
Yeah. Beautiful.
Well, thank you so much for coming on. I'm going to end our session with a round of lightning questions. So, you ready?
I am.
What did you want to be when you grew up?
A child psychologist.
Really? Yeah. As like a kid, you wanted to be a child psychologist?
the trauma that I went through, I understood the deep pain and that the world didn't see your deep pain. So I wanted to hold the space for other children to be able to access their emotions and pain.
You were a child in pain who wanted to help other children in pain. Yeah. That is so beautiful. And
so that's where I know, you know, I didn't follow that in the way that it could have been. Yet now with Lift Oneself and where people are like, you get it. It was, that was my purpose.
Yeah. 100%. You're still doing the same thing. You're helping people with their inner child.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's beautiful. I wanted to be a Spice Girl. So I was on a totally different track than you.
Yeah. I didn't, I loved like dancing. I loved the attention and music, yet I wasn't fully inclined with the music, but I used to be dancing and doing all the music, but I totally get that. Yeah. Who wouldn't want to be a Spice Girl?
Right.
And they were like their authentic self, like all different personalities and quirkiness. And
it was loved the Spice Girls. I was such a huge fan. All right. What is your favorite kid-free dinner? Because like children have kind of ruined cooking for me and just like, because they all have their own like opinions because they're these autonomous human beings and it's annoying and everyone wants to eat different things. So if you get to choose what you're having for dinner, what is it?
I don't even know. Because they're teenagers now, it's like back when they were younger, what would have been? Something with vegetables. I know that for sure. And like a steak dinner with raw vegetables.
Oh, you like raw vegetables?
And yeah. Like I like them like just steamed a bit, but have some rawness, some crunch to it because I understand the nutrients to it.
Yeah.
That took a while for me to pivot into that.
Right.
Like change my relationship with food too and understand their fuel and not comfort.
Yes.
So, yeah.
Yes. What is your favorite book?
The Untethered Soul.
The Untethered Soul. I feel like I've heard of that before, but I haven't. I'm writing that one.
Oh, please read it, Amanda. Yeah. Highly recommend Michael Singer, Untethered Soul. I will send you his podcast so you can hear. And he's just very direct of bringing you to the self and facing yourself and recognizing like syndrome. And he went through the boot camp of meditation,
yeah,
of really understanding his nervous system and the persona that was created and really just let it go.
Right. Love that. Yeah. I will add that to my list. I'm a huge reader, very avid reader. So I will absolutely read it. What is your guilty pleasure entertainment?
Guilty pleasure at Instagram.
Instagram.
Or TikTok. Yeah. Instagram or TikTok. Yeah.
Mine is watching children fall. I'm such a horrible person, but it's so funny. It's so funny.
What a woof woof. It's like, oh, wait, are you okay? Oh, okay. Yeah, my twins when they were younger, yeah, if that happened, it's like, you didn't even ask me if I was okay. She just went to laughing. I'm like,
because it's funny. It is funny, yeah, to watch children fall. Glad I'm not the only one. Okay, so this question I am actually stealing from a different podcast called the Low Life Podcast. If anybody who's listening has never checked him out, go check him out. He's my favorite lifestyle podcast. Like, he's hilarious and always has great guests. But if your belly button was an actual button, what would it do?
Open things.
Open things? Like what kind of things?
Doors.
Doors, like locked doors that you're not supposed to be getting into? Or just like you don't want to have to open doors anymore. You want them just to open for you. Like
it just doors would open, locked or not, just your opening is open.
Okay.
So all you got to do is just push the button and it'll open.
Are we talking metaphorical doors or like actual literal doors?
All of it.
All doors.
Like when you said it, I saw a push button,
yeah,
and then a door opened.
Okay. Nice.
So really an opening.
Nice.
Yeah.
If my belly button was an actual button, I would want it to make the world around me quiet, like instantly whenever I wanted it to be, because I get really overstimulated by my children and all their noise. So I'd want to be able to push it and not hear anything. But there would be like the opposite of a do not disturb function, where if it was a real emergency, I would be able to hear them. That would be able to penetrate my bubble.
I hear that. It took me a while. Like, I still navigate through that, yet I've been able to place their noise in like a space to it.
Yeah.
Because they're gamer. So when they go in, sometimes I'm talking to people and they're like, oh, that's some language. I was like, oh, yeah, they're playing a game, but I'm not fully hearing it. But other people are like cluing in right away. And I'm like, oh, okay. Like, yeah. Yeah. Because I'm like, they're human, so I got to let them have the autonomy and also, you know, navigate in my own space to not be triggered all the time.
I know.
It's so easy in my household.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's hard to find that balance of like teaching my kids how to live in a space with other people, but not controlling them and like trying to force them to fit in a container of how like I want them to live in a space with me, because like in reality I have four roommates, you know, and it's just like if they were adults and we were roommates, like we'd have to find some middle ground here where I am compromising too. It's not just about the kids like beating them down into what you want them to be.
Yeah, but I'm roommates and paying all the bills, so I have a little bit of authority.
Yes, we have a little bit of leverage there.
Yeah, but I say the same thing. I'm like, I hate my roommates. They are disgusting. They don't know how to clean. And people get tickled pink. They're like, I can't believe you're calling your children your roommates. I'm like, yeah,
that's what
they are my roommates.
Yeah.
They're my roommates, and they're invading and encroaching on my space. And fucking bonkers, and they don't respect me, and I'm trying to navigate through all of this. Yeah.
Yep.
And I hate my roommates.
Yeah. I hate my roommates too sometimes. It's totally normal and natural.
Yeah. That's what I'm saying, the realness.
Yes.
Yeah.
Thank you for joining us. Where can listeners find you if they would like to connect?
So for your listeners, I actually created a gift. So it's a meditation, a 10-minute meditation that they can download. It's an audio. So they can go to my website called liftoneself.com. So that's liftoneself.com. And then they're going to put a /, and put gift, GIFT. And that will bring them to a web link. And they'll be able to, they have to opt in because that's just the way the internet is right now. But they can unsubscribe if they want to after. And they'll get an audio of a 10-minute meditation that I guide them through. If, you know, anything resonated or you're curious about anything, come into a discovery call with me. My website, again, liftoneself.com. You also can find me on the social medias, Instagram, Facebook, TikTok. Yeah, again, Lift Oneself. I also have a podcast that's called Lift Oneself. That I have conversations where we talk about mental health and removing the stigmas. So it's an array of different topics and guests. Yet, you know, the main thing is nervous system and trauma and how to regulate that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, what the tools are and hear what people are navigating through. So again, I want to thank you, Amanda, for having me here. This was a delight to be open and, you know, just chat. And I hope whoever is listening, because I do believe in one is a million, that this conversation activated them to ripple out the energy in their million that they interact with. So
I love that.
Thank you for creating this space.
Yes. Thank you so much for joining me. And actually, I just thought of one more question that I want to ask you. If you could say fuck it to anything motherhood related, what would you say fuck it to?
Cleaning my house.
The whole thing. All cleaning.
You love cleaning?
No, I don't. I like organizing though, but they're different. They're two totally different things.
Like, no, I don't like that either.
I love organizing. I'm such like, I will get all of the little bins and organize drawers. My pantry, I love it so much, but I don't like cleaning. I don't really think anybody, I mean, maybe there are some people.
Some people do. Oh, some people do.
That's true. Cause some people find it like helpful for their stress. Like they just clean away their stress.
Anger cleaning.
Yes.
It's a good one. It's a good one. The boys don't like when mom's in her raging, angry cleaning. Cause it's like, stop yelling, mom. I'm like, don't fucking live like this. But yeah,
I know. I tell my kids all the time, if like, if you guys could just get the trash into the trash can every single time, like 100% of the trash gets into the trash can 100% of the time, the house would be like 80% cleaner instantly.
Yeah, absolutely.
If you could just do that.
Yeah. But yeah, no, it's cleaning the house.
Yeah. I feel you.
It's an awful thing.
It is horrible. And children are horrible. Are you living your one wild life to the fullest? You're not? Why the fuck not? What are you waiting for? The time to live is now, mama. Do not wait until your youngest is in college. Let your dreams hire me for an hour so I can explain how I can help you achieve any goal in your life. You've put yourself off long enough. It's time to pour into you. The link to schedule your 60-minute complimentary consultation is in my show notes. Join the community of Fuck It Moms by following me on Instagram and Facebook at Fuck It Mothering. That's fuck without the U. So F-C-K It Mothering. Make sure you subscribe to my channel so you never miss your weekly encouragement. And please rate, review, comment, and share. All of these things help with the algorithms, so that way when other overwhelmed moms are looking for encouragement, they can find me. Every month, I give away one of my favorite books and a Starbucks card to a lucky winner. All you have to do to enter is write a review or tag me in social media when you share an episode. See you next Sunday, gorgeous.